south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Here's an email I'm sure you'll find interesting. Starts out, "Dear Johnny, I was one of those do-gooders you always talk about. In the 80s, I went down with my church group to Honduras, about 20 kilometers from La Ceiba on the Atlantic coast. The little town I was in had a population of about 1,200 people, and there was virtually no serious crime. In the 3 months I was there, crime broke down to this. A group of kids were caught stealing candy from a corner store, a few drunks on the weekends, a couple of spouse abuse cases, and a flock of driveway chickens gone missing. Don't laugh, in tiny towns, that is a most serious crime. But do understand, no real violent crime. However, just 20 kilometers away was La Ceiba, at the time a population of around 100,000, and we were told the place was imminently safe during the day, but not to venture out at night alone. So we didn't, except to go to a pizza joint or two with a group. By the way, all 15 of us volunteers were around 20 or in our early 20s and pretty damn clueless. In fact, two of us had our backpacks stolen at the bus station in La Ceiba the very first day, but only because we were careless and clueless and got up and walked away every now and again and left their stuff there like you might do in a bus station back in the States. Well, you could back then. I don't know about nowadays. So yes, we're warned about the street crime in La Ceiba, Honduras, but only 20 kilometers away it was like a different world. So, John, you're definitely correct about the smaller towns in Latin America. They are self-policing. I've seen that for myself. And the kids that will become real tough, violent offenders generally migrate to the cities where there's more opportunities and gangs and such. I even saw a couple young troublemakers get booted out of town myself. So that's how I saw Honduras firsthand in the early 80s. In my younger years, I was a dyed-in-the-wool do-gooder. And for what it's worth, here are a few of my observations on being a young and clueless do-gooder in Latin America. On my first visit back in the 80s, I noticed all the locals in that little town really wanted was clean water and a good shelter. I'm talking about a decent shelter. They all had rickety wood, adobe, and laminate steel huts. Badly made garages, really. No window glass, indoor plumbing, or even decent doors that fit the frames. But really, there was a purpose to all that extra ventilation, because they cooked with firewood indoors. So people had very basic wants and desires. For one, they weren't fixated on cell phones and cable TV. There was none of that in the early 80s. Instead, they were much more pragmatic. They dreamed of having a house made out of block and concrete, not wood or adobe. A house that would stand up to the weather. They are in the hurricane belt, you know. Besides, in time, the cheap wood they use rots and gets eaten by bugs and termites eventually, too. Even more than a decent house, they wanted clean running water. And nothing so elaborate as hot water, not even water in the house. They were overjoyed just to have a water pipe outside the house that emptied in a wash basin, what they call a pila. But most of all, what families really wanted, and most people never guess this when I bring it up, they wanted a cement floor. Yep, almost all the little houses in that town had dirt floors or gravel floors, and when the rains came, well, I don't have to tell you what happens then. Talk about bugs and things that creep and crawl in the night, well, that's what you get with a dirt floor. And mosquitoes, man. If it wasn't for that powerful toxic stuff we brought down that's prohibited now but legal back then, we'd have all had malaria or dengue fever. Remember, we had 3 months of no windows, no weather stripping, and no screens. In that 3 months, we built or helped to build 30 little houses, each of around 500 square feet. It was hard, hot, sweaty work, but a lot of fun. And you know, Johnny, somehow I look back on those times as the best years of my life. It was really fulfilling. We even had a theme song. You'll never guess. Dirty deeds done dirt cheap. We even taught some of the locals how to sing it, though they never really knew what the words meant in translation. Good thing, too, huh? After that, mission accomplished. And as for me, I went back to the States, went to college, got my degree. After I graduated, I decided I'd take the summer off before I started to look for a job. Then I went down to Honduras again with the same church group. That was 6 years later. This time, to a different town, farther north, about 100 kilometers from the other little town in La Ceiba. Then, one weekend, curiosity got the best of me and some friends of mine who'd also been down with me the first time. So we visited that little town to see how it was doing 5 years later. Sure enough, the town had grown. There are a lot more substantial little houses made out of concrete block and cement. Even a few new potholed asphalt roads. And checking out those little houses that I had a hand in building, I noticed most all of those families were moving on up. They had a little refrigerator, some had microwave ovens, and they all had a TV. Yes, they were moving on up. Now, that was about in 1986. And Johnny, it makes you feel good when you run into some of the same people and you sit around with the families. They remember you from way back when, and they start telling you about their families and what's been happening in the town, in the country, and such. And one of the topics that always comes up is crime. And again, Johnny, like I think you mentioned in a previous show, those conversations and discussions with the locals bear out the fact that a lot of young adolescent kids who felt that small town life just was too slow for them or they couldn't make any money, they headed to the big cities. In Honduras, those would be Tegucigalpa, San Pedro Sula, even La Ceiba, where they think the jobs are, but in many cases it's just not true, and they end up being delinquents, and a good number of them get involved with crime and drugs and gangs. Oh, and here's something, Johnny, I don't think you ever mentioned or alluded to on your show. On that second trip, 5 or so years later, when we helped build a school and install a wastewater management system for the place, what you've called solar outhouses for Jesus. The night before our last day in Honduras, when we were supposed to head back to the States, we had a nice get-together with the townspeople and the people that we'd helped. And you know, during that farewell session, we had a question and answer period. We asked the townspeople what they had planned and what their goals and desires were for the future. Yes, many of them said they planned on working hard to improve their little pueblo, but sadly enough, it seemed most all of the adolescents and young adults said their main goal in life was to go to the U.S., which at the time didn't make a lot of sense to us, but in retrospect was not surprising, especially when we come rolling in out of the blue with all our technology and gizmos, and in just a few months solve some of the lifelong problems they've had in their little pueblo. Oh, and I forgot to tell you, we always land with big care packages for everyone too, so for them, it's Christmas in July. Really, when you analyze it, what else are they supposed to think? We give them such a starry-eyed vision of what it's like up in the first world, and they can see it for themselves just the way we dress, the shoes, the luggage we had, the devices, the little portable water purifiers, for example, our satellite phone. Yep, we had one of those. Yes, and we brought our Sony Walkmans down with us too. Then we turn around and hand them all this fabulous stuff for free. Why wouldn't they want to make their way up to the States and have a piece of that action too? I even remember one of the questions I kept getting from the teenage and adolescent Latin kids over and over again. Does everyone in Los Estados have a Walkman? And I said, yes, most all young people in the States have one. I even gave mine away to one young kid. Unfortunately, back then there were no rechargeable batteries. Poor kid probably didn't get much use out of it. Though I did leave him with three discs. Guns N' Roses, Quiet Riot, and Dirty Deeds Done Dirt Cheap, AC/DC. But I repeat, the young adults there and adolescent kids all had in their mind the great dream of going to the United States. Of course, the older folks were a lot more pragmatic. But the young people absolutely convinced the United States was the ticket. And I think in a lot of ways, us do-gooders weren't doing much good at all. In the short run, yes, but in the long term, no. It's that unintended consequence thing again. A double-edged sword. We come down, we do good. But in the process, we plant a kind of a permanent longing in the minds of young adults and adolescents. A longing to have what we have. And they know they're not going to achieve that in their own pueblo, at least not in their lifetime. Though they certainly believe they can achieve that if they get to the States somehow. So, Johnny, being a do-gooder with my boots on the ground kind of woke me up to a few things. By the way, back then I was a serious do-gooder, but now I'm a do-gooder light. Light and local, meaning I do good, but only when I can see the good effects firsthand and the light in the eyes of the people that I'm helping. But you see, one of the things I've come to realize along the way is that you can do good, but you should never make a pattern or a habit out of it, or it just might backfire. Not repetitively with the same people. You have to spread it around. What I mean is, the right way to do it is like we started doing it. We went to one town, did some work, helped some people, but we didn't go back to the same place every year. That's a big mistake I've found. Because if the people think or know you're coming back with more, you're not doing them a favor at all. Sooner or later, and usually sooner, if you don't come back, they'll actually get mad at you. You know, bite the hand that feeds you and all that. So actually, Johnny, I came down on 3 different do-gooder missions to Honduras. And you know, we always got a big pep talk about Honduras and crime before we came down. Part of our orientation to the country. And since I had a good smattering of boots on the ground over the past 20 years in Honduras, up in the States, when people find out I've been to Honduras 3 separate times on goodwill missions and such, I sometimes get a response on the order of, "Man, you're a brave soul. I admire that. I hear the crime down there is out of control. How'd you deal with it?" Then there are some that'll say the old cliche, "Dennis, no matter what they say, the USA is still the greatest country in the world." I've heard that one a few times. Then they pat me on the back and say, "Good for you. Someone's got to help those poor, unfortunate devils, I guess." Yep, us do-gooders hear that stuff over and over again. As for a lot of United States citizens, as soon as I mention the country of Honduras or even Latin America, they instantly associate the place with narcos and drugs and massive amounts of crime. Though you can't hardly blame them, because that's the kind of stuff we see on the 6 o'clock news up north. If it's not some kind of drug deal gone bad, a narco bust, a hurricane, an earthquake, a tsunami, a volcano eruption, it seems like the only news we get about Latin America up in the United States is bad news. Even the Olympics, supposed to be a nice, pleasant event, right? Nothing but wave after wave of bad news on that front, too. And if you think that's hyperbole, just ask anyone up in the States who hasn't traveled there. I found the first thing that enters into the conversation is talk about crime. So allow me to give you my do-gooder light opinion on the crime situation in Latin America. Here's how I see it. The United States and the rest of the first world have their own kind of 21st century crime that's slightly different from Latin American crime. They have their snipers, mass shootings, bombers, and terrorist cells. You can practically count on reading about incidents like that every week, even twice a week in the papers these days. Whereas in Latin America, there are plenty of narcos and drug-related crimes, but people who live there know it only happens in certain bad neighborhoods. It's highly localized. Whereas in Europe and in the United States, those mass shootings and bombings, etc., are highly random. Could happen anywhere, at Walmart, post office, a Taco Bell, your local McDonald's, a nursery school, parking lot, church, in places none of us can avoid because the violence is totally random. So as I see it, the thing that almost everybody in the States is missing on this crime issue, yes, Latin America has narcos, criminals, and crime, but they're all in very specific areas. They don't have shootouts in Walmart parking lots or in McDonald's. At least up till now, that's been a first world phenomena. No terrorist group or psychotic individuals take over abortion clinics or gun down doctors or shoot 50 gays in a nightclub. There are no disgruntled goth kids bringing weapons to school and blasting their teachers and schoolmates. That's most likely, though, because Latin American kids are not on psychotropic medicines. Not yet, anyway. So yes, Latin America has a lot of crime and violence, but it's very predictable, and in places and neighborhoods we know that are violent and should very much avoid. In Latin America, crime is, as realtors would say, location, location, location. Whereas up in the United States, yes, in the big city, it's about location, but there's the added wild card of randomness. Next hit could be a water supply or an electrical power station, the internet, sports stadium, who knows? That's the big difference. In the US and Europe, there's that random component. So in Latin America, you just don't read about random acts of mayhem and craziness. I guess I can't say it any simpler than that. When there's a shootout, it's almost always in a bad neighborhood, in narco territory. When there's a robbery or an assault on a bus, it's a bus full of poor people who can't afford taxis or their own cars. Which reminds me, Johnny, you know, do-gooders ride chicken buses. Why? Because we like to mix with the poor people we're helping. We try as much as we can to bond with them and not seem aloof. I know, it's so ironic. The shoes we wear and the piercings in our noses, lips, belly buttons, eyelids, nipples, and tongues can be as much as a month's salary to the average person we're trying to help. So, Johnny, your hard and fast rule about gringos not riding chicken buses does not apply to do-gooders. Sure, it's not recommended, but we're willing to take the risk. That's part of being a do-gooder, you know. Look, what kind of impression would we leave on the locals if we got chauffeured around in Range Rovers? So, Johnny, that's an opinion from a do-gooder with boots on the ground, from one who's seen the changes over the last 20 years or so. And one of those changes, sad to say, is in the people themselves. For my first trip down in the early 80s, small-town Latins just wanted to improve their little Latin life. They wanted to remain in their pueblos and make them better. And now, unfortunately, young Latin kids have as a primary goal visiting Disneyland. Young adults and adolescents just want to get to the U.S. somehow, and older folks, they just want to make do, live their life, and stay put for the most part. So from what I can see, it's too late now. The genie's out of the bottle, the cat's out of the bag. Cell phones, TV, and the internet have given many Latins unrealistic expectations, and there really is no turning back. So you may think a guy like me with those opinions would be soured on Latin America. Well, just the opposite. In fact, I finally worked it out so I can come down to your January seminar. Though I really would like to know if it's possible for you to hook me up with a roommate so that I can realize an extra $500 savings over the single occupancy rate. I heard you talk about that on your show a couple months ago, that you've paired up people who are looking for roommates. I'm really hoping that it's possible for me this time because, you know, I'm on a pretty tight budget. I was one of those people who went to college and got a useless psychology degree, was never able to get a job in my field, ended up for many years working as an assistant manager at a large supermarket chain that shall remain nameless. And now, of all things, I'm in law enforcement. Oh, and Johnny, you might think with my boots on the ground in Latin America, I even know Spanish, 6 out of 10 anyway, you might be wondering why I want to take the seminar at all. Well, for me, it's all going to be about the business opportunities for gringos in Latin America. For all the time I spent down there, there was almost zero exposure to business or business ideas for gringos. Not that I expected anything, or there should have been. After all, we were down there for completely different purposes. But I do wish I would have kept my eyes open a bit more. If I'd only known back then, I'd probably end up in Latin America for good. Things would have turned out much differently for me. That's why I'm coming to the seminar, looking mostly to pick up some business ideas to get my Latin American lifestyle jump-started. And also, on the top of my list is to apply for residency when I'm down doing the seminar, if that's possible. Please, could you let me know the time frame on doing both the seminar and applying for residency? Hope to see you soon, Dennis. P.S. Don't forget, I need a roommate. Please put the word out if you can. All right, Dennis, will do. By the way, that's one of the 3 to 4 page emails I often get. Most of them I can cut down to a couple of minutes, but this one I think was worth reading all the way through. And yes, I don't think I've mentioned it too many times, but with nearly all of my expat insider seminars, I've managed to hook up people looking for roommates. Always same gender, of course, no hanky-panky. Because, you see, if you sign up for the seminar with 2 people, double occupancy, there's a built-in $1,000 discount over 2 people signing up with single occupancy. So if you pair up, you can each save $500. That's in addition to the early bird discount, which ends on the 1st of November. So just go to www.thenewexpat.com, click on Johnny's 2017 seminar at the top of the page, and do get on board. There are still some spots available. Don't miss out on this one. We are 3/4 filled now, so do act fast. Anyway, Dennis also asked about the timing necessary if you're coming down to the seminar, and also applying for residency on the same trip. Well, you know, that's one of the reasons I opened up enrollment to the seminar 2 months early this time, so people could plan way ahead, get their ducks in order, and kill 2 birds with 1 stone. So in brief, here's how the temporary residency procedure goes and the timing for it. And of course, we're talking about the case to get Guatemala residency because, after all, that's where the seminar is being held. Not to mention, Guatemala is by far one of the easiest and least expensive countries to get your residency. Though things are changing fast and it's getting more and more difficult in all Latin countries. But you knew that already, right? So it really is now or never. Anyway, the most difficult part in the process of applying for temporary or permanent residency is to get the appointment at the U.S. Embassy in Guatemala or whichever Latin country you happen to be applying for residency in. The trick is to get that appointment to coincide with the time that you're in that Latin country, because you have to be there to hand your passport to the embassy so they can make a copy and certify it. Wow, that sounds easy enough. How could that be the most difficult part of the process? The crazy part is that it's by appointment only, just to hand them your passport. And you have to get that appointment on the internet. Oddly enough, if you check right now to see if you could get an appointment, you'll find that in most cases, the appointment schedule is closed. Filled. They're not taken anymore. When you try, it says, check back at a later date. So you keep on checking, morning and evening, and you just can't get a slot. Now, that's your own U.S. embassy that's f***ing with you. You're a U.S. citizen. You should be able to walk right in, like you could before, a year or so ago, and get a certified copy of your passport in 10 minutes, face-to-face. Who would have believed even a year ago that your own embassy wouldn't give you an appointment for, get this, up to 3 months in the future? And that's true in every Latin country now. You must get that appointment, and appointments are running up to 3 months from the moment you get online and try to make one. So that's why if you're trying to go for your residency when you're at the seminar in January, you have to start right now. So then what about that appointment? Well, here's how it works. Suppose you're channel surfing on your sofa up in Cleveland right now. You send a nice scan of the photo page of your passport to our seminar lawyer. He hands it off to one of his assistants, and she gets on the internet every day hoping to get you an appointment. And most of the time, as I mentioned before, she won't be able to. It'll say, check back at a later date. Appointments are filled. But she'll keep trying every day, sometimes once in the morning and in the afternoon. Finally, she'll get you an appointment. Slots will open up. Could be 2 weeks, 2 months, even more. Meanwhile, you're up in Cleveland and not in Guatemala. What are you going to do when that appointment time comes, since you're at the mercy of when they assign it to you? Well, luckily, the lawyer's assistant can reschedule that appointment into the future. At least she's been able to pull that off so far, to where it lands within a week or so before the seminar, or within a week or so right after the seminar. Which is why it's always recommended to stay at least a week before or a week after the seminar if you're going for permanent or temporary residency during that time. So as you can see, the craziness of this and the time delays have nothing to do with Guatemala immigration. It has to do with getting that stupid appointment at your own U.S. embassy just to get your passport certified. Talk about making you go through some ridiculous hoops, huh? Well, that step did not exist a year ago. However, it exists now in every single U.S. embassy in every single Latin country. And note that online appointment crap is not just to get a passport certified. It's for anything you have to do in person down at the embassy. You can no longer just walk in, take a number, and sit down, like you always could do in the past. What a bunch of lard-ass slugs, huh? Yeah, we know it's a game, and we can see what they're doing. Anyway, the other stuff you'll need to bring down if you're applying for your permanent or temporary residency will be that authenticated police or sheriff's good conduct report. And in a past show, we explained the three different stamps and signatures you'll need to get to have that document in the correct form to be submitted to the Guatemalan lawyer. That's all you'll need to bring if you're applying for temporary residency. You won't have to prove any financial means or income for temporary residency either, which is really fortunate and very cool because so many Latin countries will make you provide financial statements and even a complete certified medical exam. So what's that for, and how easy would it be for them to disqualify you from residency? Who knows, huh? Well, not so in Guatemala, not yet anyway. However, if you're applying for permanent residency, which is always the best because it eliminates that 2 years that run if you have temporary residency, in that case, you'll have to prove through documentation that's authenticated and certified that you make $1,000 or more a month from an outside source. Then you can go directly to permanent residency. And all these steps are completely explained in a report that I put together called Residency in Latin America, the Guatemalan Example. In fact, it takes you through an actual by-the-numbers case of a person who went through all of that and successfully accomplished it. By the way, you should give yourself minimally 2 weeks, and that's cutting it close, to get all your paperwork up in the States. Most people say it takes 3 weeks to a month, but I've heard people getting it done in 1 week. That said, if you want a copy of that report, just send me an email. So again, if you're coming down to the seminar and you want to get that permanent or temporary residency started and kill two birds with one stone, you should add some extra days before or after the seminar. And if you're wondering what to do while you're waiting around for that appointment at the U.S. Embassy, well, just take one of John Galt's pre- or post-seminar trips. Nope, those trips will not interfere with your embassy appointment. In fact, your trip to the embassy can be worked in quite easily. By the way, on the subject of do-gooders and religion, the other day I accompanied a non-Spanish-speaking gringo to a local Latin police station so that he could get a copy of his antecedentes penales. Antecedentes penales are the Latin version of a police good conduct report. So then you might ask, why in the hell would he need a good conduct report from a Latin police station? Well, that's because having one of those is almost always a requirement when you apply for a job on the books anywhere in Latin America. Along with your photo and CV in the interview, you'll have to produce a local good conduct police report, for which they'll charge all of $5. By the way, if you're a gringo with temporary residency, when your approximate 2 years are up and you shift over to permanent residency, you'll have to get one of those antecedentes penales reports too. But your lawyer will do that for you. You won't have to get involved. Anyway, speaking of religion and separation of church and state, there just ain't none down here in Latin America. In fact, when I walked into that police station, the first thing I noticed was a big crucifix hanging right over the head of the desk sergeant at his cubicle. And on the opposite wall was a kind of a crude mural with Moses and the Ten Commandments. Right next to a sign that said, "Es prohibido para entrar con armas de fuego." You're not permitted to enter the premises with guns. So anyway, after waiting around for about an hour, my friend finally got his police report, paid his $5, and guess what it said on the bottom of the receipt? Dios bendiga. May God bless. So as for separation of church and state in Latin America, there ain't none. Not to mention every park, every other street, most towns, schools, buildings, hills, valleys, rivers, even volcanoes are named after saints or religious icons. Nothing wrong with that, but for certain people it takes some getting used to, and some never do, like for example, Muslims. Okay, we're getting close to the end of the show now. I'd like to remind you to check out my YouTube channel. That's YouTube/TheExpatFiles. Got something like 100 YouTubes out there now. Each one a little weird, crazy, and different. Do subscribe. It's free.
South of the border.
This is The Expat Files, living in Latin America. If you want me to help you out with your own Plan B, just schedule a one-on-one consult. Send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to learn how to move forward with your own Plan B from right up there in the States, go to www.expatplanb.com and check out my 3 videos. See ya. Nos vemos.